Welcome into the Hall Show, powered by Chevron. I am Mike Danson. You're out there going, hey, wait, that's not Brady. That's not Brady. And you're right. I'm Mike Danson. I host Preps Rewind on Saturday mornings from 10 to 11, talking about all things preps going on. But with Brady being out today, got the opportunity to come and sit in the big chair here and see if I can make it through 3 hours of radio rather than the 1 hour that I'm used to. So just a little bit about me, my fandom. As we go through today, you're gonna kind of find out how I feel about things. First thing I know is going to come out is I'm not a Broncos fan, and I'm sorry for that. I know that being in Colorado, that's kind of what the expectation is that you're supposed to be a Broncos fan, but that's not the way I was raised. I was raised as a Minnesota Vikings fan. My dad, he grew up in Minnesota, and it just kind of got passed down. It's a curse that I'm passing down to my son now, and I feel bad about doing that as the Vikings are 0-4 in Super Bowls and haven't been to one since the 70s. So I'm not a Broncos fan. I do really like the Avalanche. I've been an Avs fan since they came from Quebec. I love watching hockey. I love the fast pace of it. I very much enjoy watching the Avalanche. NBA, I am a Nuggets fan. The Nuggets have captured my attention the last few years, the Carmelo Anthony years, that run to the Western Conference Finals when Carmelo was here against the Lakers, and they fall short there. But then now that we've gained Nikola Jokic, it's just it's fun to watch. I think gambling has helped me get more interested into the NBA. I haven't watched a lot until the last few years when gambling has taken over, but I do enjoy the Nuggets. My one real love for Colorado sports teams, though, are the Rockies. I've loved the Rockies. I've been watching them since they began existence, and this is going to lead into the first story that we're going to talk about. It seems to be the story du jour today for Colorado sports talk is at 4 o'clock Mountain Time. We're going to find out if Todd Helton gets to be into the Hall of Fame. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. The only reason he's not in the Hall of Fame already is because he played his games at Coors Field. Todd Helton, as Coors Field has this stigma that it's a home run park, it's a hitter's park, and all this stuff, but the stats don't always say that. If you look at stats of other ballparks, Yankee Stadium, if you hit it down that right field line in Yankee Stadium, the ball flies. Yeah, Coors Field has big gaps. It sets up for somebody to hit a lot of doubles. It helps for average. But there's a lot of parks that have that same issue. There's a lot of hitters parks out there, but for some reason, and we know it's because of the altitude, Coors Field has this stigma that carries on, and that's the only reason Todd Helton is not in the Hall of Fame already. All of his stats say that he should be in the Hall of Fame. He has a on-base percentage of 386. His on-base percentage of 386 is higher than Hall of Famers Rod Carew, Tony Gwynn, probably two of the best hitters ever to play. It's higher than Hannes Wagner, Joe Morgan, Vladimir Guerrero, Fred McGriff, Frank Robinson, Derek Jeter, Hank Aaron, and numerous others that are already in the Hall of Fame. He really, his road stats, that's his road stats. On base percentage on the road is 386, and that's better than all of those Hall of Famers. His road stats themselves are good enough that he should be in the Hall of Fame already. And we don't talk, okay, that's great. But look at his home stats then. We throw in those with those amazing road stats. His batting average at home, 345, he hit 227 home runs. other accolades for Todd Helton that should push him over the limit to be into the Hall of Fame? Gold gloves in 2001, 2002, 2004. He wasn't just a hitter. He was an amazing first baseman defensively. Later in his career, when the back problems started to creep in, it got a little harder for him over there at first base, but he was still better. Look at what the Rockies have gone through first base-wise since Todd Helton has left. It's just been a rotating door over there, and the defense has fallen off. It really has. He saved so many errors over there at first base with his glove. Todd Helton was an all-star 5 times. He won 4 Silver Slugger Awards. And then we look, okay, Todd Helton never won an MVP. He literally got screwed out of the 2000 MVP. He should have won it. That award was given to Jeff Kent, the Giants second baseman. He won the award even though, if you took wins above replacement, that's a huge stat in baseball at this point. Todd Helton's wins above replacement were 2 points, almost 2 points higher, almost 2 wins higher than Jeff Kent that season. The only person that was close to Todd Helton in wins above replacement was Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds was it. He had a 7.7 wins above replacement that year. Todd Helton's was 8.9 wins above replacement in 2000. That season, Helton hit .372 with 59 doubles, 42 home runs, 147 RBIs. Oh my gosh, he made all these stats at Coors Field. It had to happen at Coors Field. Out on the road in 2000, Todd Helton hit .353 that season. It wasn't all at Coors Field. But that's why he didn't win the 2000 MVP. He should have won it. And the craziest thing about it to me, not just did he not win the MVP that year, he finished 5th in voting. He is being held back because of this Coors Field stigma, and it's just absurd. He finished 5th behind Kent, who was the winner. Barry Bonds was 2nd. Mike Piazza was 3rd, third. Jim Edmonds was 4th. And then Todd Helton finally came in the 5th slot there. These are all reasons that stat-wise Todd Helton should be in the Hall of Fame. But how many teams, the face of the franchise, are not in the Hall of Fame? He played with the Rockies for 17 seasons, all 17 seasons. And there were struggles, lots and lots of struggles through all of those years. But Todd Helton chose to stay in Colorado. He chose to stay playing for the Colorado Rockies. He in today's game, he would have done what Nolan Arenado did to the Rockies and say, guys, I'm tired of losing. If we're not going to go and compete, then I want out of here. But he didn't. He didn't do that. He didn't ask to be traded. And he was rewarded with the World Series trip in 2007. And we got the First Advantage text line. One thing that I would like, if you guys are out there, text in your favorite Todd Helton moment from when he was with the Rockies. For me, it's so plain and simple. The September home run against the Dodgers walk-off that kept them going in that just amazing run to get into the playoffs and then to carry it all the way into the World Series. But that walk-off home run where he hits it and he's rounding third base and you never saw that kind of emotion out of Todd Helton. He grabs his helmet off and he throws it up in the air and then he jumps into the dog pile at home plate. Oh, just an amazing, amazing scene. I was so happy for Todd Helton to be able to get a chance to play in those meaningful games. Last year, Todd Helton fell 11 votes short of being in the Hall of Fame. As of right now, this morning, he sat at 82% of the votes to get in. You need to have 75%. Last year, on that final day, his percentage dropped by 6.4%. So anybody out there can do the math. Like, if he drops 6.4% today on the final day again, it's a very narrow margin, but he does get in. 75.6% will get him into the Hall of Fame, where he belongs. Mr. Rocky, the Todd father, Todd Helton, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Angel, let's go to the good, the bad, and the ugly. All right, the good for me. Something that it needs to be talked about, I think. The CU women's basketball team. This CU women's basketball team is absolutely amazing. They're number three in the NCAA rankings right now on the women's basketball side. They started the season with a huge, huge win over defending national champion, the LSU Tigers. And it wasn't just a win. It was 92-78. They took it to the defending champions. The CU women's basketball team is 16-2 overall, 6-1 in conference. They average nearly 80 points a game with a winning margin of 15 points per game. So they're not just winning games. They are dominating games. They have four players that are averaging over 10 points a game, led by Aaronette Vonleh at 14.4 points per game and Jalen Sherrod at 14.2 points per game. It's time to pay attention to this team. They have a chance to win a national champion, legitimate chance to win a national championship. They're going to be in the tournament. We know that. It's pretty set already. Pay attention to that CU women's basketball team. Moving over to the bad. And this one hit close to home for me last night as I was kind of scrolling through X, formerly Twitter. One of my favorite players growing up, the Chicago Cubs were always on WGN TV. They play a lot more day games than most teams do, just based on, that's just what the Cubs do. They play more day games. Ryan Sandberg, Cubs second baseman, Hall of Famer. He's second all time in Gold Gloves as a second baseman. He has 9. He was a 10 consecutive years of being voted an all-star. He had a streak of 123 games playing at second base, where it's busy there. It's not the hot corner, but it's still hot. He played 123 consecutive games without an error. Ryan Sandberg, he announced that he's been diagnosed with metastatic prostate cancer. He's being treated for that. Just that one kind of hit me because I was a second baseman when I was growing up playing Little League, and Ryan Sandberg was one of those guys that I watched all the time. And the ugly. Brady and Angel talked about this a little bit yesterday. And I'm just sitting there yelling at the radio, listening to these guys and just waiting for my chance to get in here today. The Caitlin Clark situation, the fact that any of this stuff is being put on Caitlin Clark is absolutely absurd. It's crazy to me that anybody would. I don't care if she flopped. I don't care if she made it out to be way more than what it was. She shouldn't have to worry about a fan being on the court after the game. There's no reason that if she wants to get off that court as fast as possible because they lost, she has all the power to run as fast as she wants to her locker room without the chance of running into a fan that is running onto the court. And this situation may not be ugly per se, but the ugliness is coming at some point. If we continue to let students run onto the court, run onto the field during these upset wins, something bad is going to happen. It's going to happen. There's going to be some drunk student that gets in the face of some big football player after a game where he's very, very frustrated. And even if this football player just kind of shoves the guy out of the way, it's going to cause issues. And I hope if it does happen, it is just kind of a shove out of the way. It's not, you know, taking a swing or something like, my gosh, if that were to happen, who would that fall on? Angel, who do you think that would fall on? Do you think that would fall on the school for allowing these students onto the field? Or do you think it's going to ultimately fall on the student athlete who may take that chance to shove or, I pray to God it doesn't happen, but do something more to that student that comes on the field or court?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I'm not a fan of field storming or court storming. I think my biggest concern is like the player safety. Like, you know, when the coaches are going to meet at midfield for a handshake, there's 3-4 policemen right next to them the whole time because you want to protect your coach. But then it's like the players, they can fend for themselves. They're student athletes. They're working out. They're physical. They're fit, whatever. But when you get in a situation like that, especially with a big name like Caitlin Clark, you do start to bring that question up. And I know some schools have, you know, there's fines for storming the field. You know, you see football, they'll tear down the goalposts. I can't imagine those are cheap to come by. So, you know, the school has to pay for that as well. And then you start getting into taking tickets away from students. Yeah, I agree with all the biggest safety concerns. But to your question there, it would be tough. I think I've seen a few moments where players have had to almost defend themselves a little bit against fans. And mostly it's just because they just want to get off the field as quickly as possible. It's a tough loss, bad game. There's thousands of people storming onto the field, and you just want to get to your locker room. It's confusing because, you know, maybe you get turned around. You're not sure which tunnel you're supposed to go to. So, yeah, I think that'd be an interesting situation. I guess we'll examine the Caitlin Clark one and figure out where the blame is going to be put on that. I, for one, just watching the video, I think she could have avoided it. But I also understand that in the heat of the moment and you just want to go to the locker room, decompress after a tough loss, running into a fan like that, almost potentially getting hurt. Hopefully it's not serious enough for her, but just it's a weird situation. I'm not a fan of storming the court or anything like that.
No, and don't get me wrong. Like, I completely agree with you that Caitlin Clark may have been able to dodge this fan at that moment, but for me, it all goes back to the fact that she shouldn't have to. Like, there shouldn't be any moment in time where she should have to worry about a fan being on the court with her. It just it shouldn't even be an option. I really lean towards this this keep the students off of the playing surface, whether it's a court or field, whatever it may be. Remember, the First Advantage text line is there, 888-530-0043. Send in your favorite Todd Helton moments. I would like to hear about some of you out there and what your thoughts are. On the other side of this break, we're going to talk a little bit more Rockies. We're going to talk about the Rockies TV situation and what that looks like here as we move into next season. You are listening to The Hall Show, powered by Chevron, on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Football season is over. But college basketball is heating up. Hear UNC Bears hoops and Westwood One's coverage of college basketball on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hey, what's going on? This is Justin Adams with CBS 4 down in Denver, Colorado, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
Holiday at first. Todd drives one high and deep right field. Get up and get out. Helton has done it. The Rockies win it. Todd Helton, the walk-off two-run shot. Colorado has swept the Dodgers.
Eighth time on a walk-off win for the Rockies this year. Nobody's enjoyed it more than that guy.
Welcome back into The Whole Show, powered by Chevron. And that's the Angel on the other side of the glass giving me that's my moment right there. That's my Todd Helton moment, the two-run blast against the Dodgers. Once again, if you have a Todd Helton moment as we look for him to get into the Hall of Fame today, send it into the First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. Now we're going to kind of move on a little bit more Rockies talk here, but here's things we know about the upcoming season for the Rockies, all right? February 15th, less than a month away now, pitchers and catchers report. February 20th is the first full squad workout. February 23rd, that's the first spring training game for the Rockies. March 28th, at the National League champion D-backs. That's still weird to say. March 28th, that's opening day for the Rockies. And then the home opener on April 5th against the Tampa Bay Rays. Those are all things that we know about the Rockies as we head into this season. One thing we don't know is, are any of us going to be able to watch the Rockies this year? It's kind of scary, but who's going to broadcast these games? It's seeming more and more that the broadcast rights are going to be taken over by MLB. It's going to be on MLB.tv. And we don't know this for sure, but we kind of have an idea of how this is going to go because it happened with the Padres just last summer. They lost their TV deal, and the company went bankrupt. They lost it, so they couldn't broadcast the Padres games anymore. So MLB jumps in and goes, "We'll make sure that your fans in the San Diego area can watch your San Diego Padres games." And they say that that expanded the ability of homes to watch the games went from 1.1 million up to 3.2 million homes. That's an increase of 2.1 million homes that could watch the games. But that doesn't mean that all those homes are going to go out and buy MLB.tv, the package that's necessary to be able to watch those games. So, and the other thing to think about is the Rockies are not the Padres at this point. The Rockies are coming off their first losing, their first 100 loss season. And although that the Rockies sit at, they averaged right around 32,000 fans coming to Coors Field, that sits about 14th in home attendance. The TV ratings were completely different. On average, the Rockies drew just 15,000 households per game. And that's according to Forbes and Nielsen Media. So the only two teams that were worse for people sitting at home watching games. Do you have any guesses, Angel, on the other two teams that would be worse than the Rockies on people watching them at home?
I'll go Tampa Bay and let's go with the Twins.
Okay, Minnesota. So you get one ding and you get one X here. All so right. Tampa Bay was one of those teams. The other team, it's. Once I say it, you're going to go, oh, yeah, that makes tons of sense. The Oakland Athletics, who had just an absolute horrible season last year, are going to be moving eventually to Las Vegas at this point. So those are the only two teams that had worse TV ratings than the Rockies. So what has happened is AT&T Sports Rocky Mountain that had the Rockies games, they were bought out by another company, and that company said, "We're losing money on these regional sports broadcasting networks, and we're just going to shut them all down." They wanted to shut it down before last season, but they kept it alive. They kept it going through the Rocky season, and then in December, AT&T Sports Rocky Mountain just goes away. It's not existent. It's not a channel anymore. One of the huge things that comes up with this is the Rockies are already struggling. They're already putting out a product that's not that great. But a lot of this money that they pay to the players comes from these regional broadcasting payments. The Rockies made $57 million as a part of the deal with AT&T Sportsnet. That's how much the TV station is paying the Rockies to have the rights to broadcast their game. What's going to happen now is, and it's going to be different with the Padres last year, MLB said, we're going to supplement you even though we're not really making any money off this. MLB, we're going to supplement you, Padres. But they said, this is the only year we're doing this. We're not going to do that. So all these teams that are having to move over to MLB.tv, that's the Rockies. It's that you talked about it, the Twins. It's almost a dozen teams that are going to be broadcasted by MLB.tv at this point. The only way they're going to get money is if people subscribe to this. It's looking like it's going to be, just basing it off of what the Padres did last year, it was $19.99 per month, and that took away all the blackout fee, all that stuff that goes along with watching games streaming. So there's no blackout fees if you pay that $19.99 a month or $74.99 for the year. So all the people in like Colorado that would pay for that, that all goes to the Rockies. That money will go to the Rockies. The only other option for the Rockies to make money is if one of these local stations around, I don't know what that would mean. Like maybe when I was a kid, Channel 2 was the one who broadcast the Rockies game. So if one of these stations pick up the rights to broadcast games, then the Rockies would make money off of the they would make money off of the advertising that is bought to be shown during Rockies games. So in the long run, what we're seeing is the Rockies aren't going to make $57 million from their TV rights this year. It's not realistic to even think that's going to happen. So what are we going to see? You think that the Rockies are putting out a rough product right now to watch? Yeah, they're young, but they just lost 100 or more than 100 games. So what's going to happen? Ticket prices? Yeah, probably going to have to go up to bring in more money to be able to pay these players. You want to have a beer and a hot dog? You better break out a 50. You're not going to get that stuff for a $20 bill anymore. It's going to be interesting how this really affects the fans as we move through this situation. And it's sad that the Rockies, they're not the only team that are having this issue. There's lots of teams that are going through this. One option that everybody, like when I first started thinking about this, is I went, oh my gosh, this would be the most amazing thing, is Altitude Network. We already have Altitude. I know if you're a Comcast person, sorry, it is what it is at this point. I don't think they're ever going to get this figured out. I think Altitude was interested in getting the Rockies games because they thought maybe that'll help with the negotiation of getting back onto Comcast, but that's kind of fallen through also. But in the long run, I think if we could somehow talk Altitude and Kroenke Sports Entertainment to say, hey, we're going to start broadcasting these Rockies games. Man, Angel, the dream of mine is they start broadcasting these games, and then Kroenke goes, how about we just buy the team? What a feeling that would be to have a owner who's capable of building us a team that could win a World Series. Look at what the Kroenkes have done over the past few years. Like, it's a 3-year window. Is that what we're, or maybe just a 2-year window where we have the Rams, the Avalanche, and the Nuggets all winning championships? Is that right? Just a 2-year window?
Yeah, within the last 2-3 years, I think they're one of the more popular names in terms of sports ownership. And I think the Rockies, as you mentioned, it's an idea. It would be a dream, but it's also a big gamble in terms of the organization itself and the lack of success it's had, also coming off of their worst season in team history. And then you talk about, you know, the changes for the fans. I think Coors Field for a lot of people it's a summer hangout spot, you know. Yeah. Oh, we can go hang out downtown Denver, go to Coors Field. Hey, there's also a baseball game going on, but we're going to go to the rooftop and just hang out there. So when you talk about making that fan experience worthwhile, spending $100-$200 for a day game in the middle of summer, it's hot outside, you know the sunset's going to be in your eyes for most of the game. am I really just going to sit here all afternoon and watch this poor performance of a baseball team? I think a lot of fans, you know, they want some change. Obviously, it's a difficult business and sports ownership, but there's this kind of weird relationship with the Monforts. Like, we love them for bringing us baseball, but we also, like, we want better baseball.
Yep.
And losing the TV rights is a big part of that when you start to say, well, we just need to get better players. Well, you got to have money to pay those better players, and if we don't have TV rights, it's hard to find that money.
Well, and all this kind of plays into the problem that is baseball at this point. Baseball is a world of haves and have-nots for sure. You have the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Cubs. They have their own network. Mm-hmm. And those networks can just pay as much money as they think the team is going to need at that point to broadcast the games. Baseball has plenty of issues. They fixed some of it with the faster games this last year, I think. At some point, a salary cap and stuff like that is going to have to be looked at to make it a fair playing field, or else it's just not going to be a good enough product to watch. You're going to have five teams that can win the championship, and that's it.
Yeah, I think maybe for the Rockies, they try to schedule as many Dodgers home games as you can, just because you know those are going to sell out because of that roster that they have.
Yep. All right, Angel, I think we'll hop out now and get to the sports flash. And then on the other side, we'll talk a little NBA.
This is Kelly Lyle with the Fort Collins, Colorado, and your CSU Insider on The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
Chance at 70. Embiid, coast to coast for 70.
That's good. I mean, credit to all these guys. Extremely unselfish people. Like I said, unselfish teammates, and you know, they just got me the ball, and you know, I was hot, and they made sure that they put me in the best position. You know, credit to the coaching staff too. So you know, I'm just among amazing people.
Welcome back into The Whole Show, powered by Chevron. And you heard it there. There's something about January 22nd in the NBA. Going back to 2006, that is the day the late, great Kobe Bryant had his 81-point game. That was also on January 22nd. And then we talked about it last night. That was Joel Embiid. Bringing us back in there, he sets the 76ers record last night. He scored 70 points, and that's not all he did. 70 points is absolute. I can't imagine 70 points like that. That's so many. And he also had 18 rebounds, and you score 70 points and you have 5 assists also. I heard one drop too, where he mentioned that he had some spots where he missed some shots that he would normally make, and it easily could have been another like Kobe Bryant 81-point game. But Embiid does all that. Like I said, he sets the 76ers scoring record with 70 points in the big win over the Spurs and Victor Wembanyama. 133-123, 76ers get that win. But as amazing as it is that somebody scored 70 points last night, I wonder what the odds are to have another person that same night score in the 60s. And that's exactly what happened. I don't know if they both knew that was the night that Kobe Bryant went out and scored his 81, and they thought, man, I'm going to go for it tonight and just see what can happen. But Carl Anthony Towns of the Minnesota Timberwolves, he had a huge night. He scored 62. He had 8 rebounds. One of the stats that kind of amazed me as I looked at this, Carl Anthony Towns, I don't think of Carl Anthony Towns as a 3-point shooter. It's not something that I go, yeah, that guy, he must fire it up. He's like the next Steph Curry or anything like that. But Carl Anthony Towns last night, 10 of 15 from 3-point range. That's pretty impressive for a big guy there. It's not something that I I would ever expect to see out of him. But he did it last night. And I think I read somewhere that Karl Anthony Towns now has the top three scoring performances in Minnesota Timberwolf history. So he had 60 a couple years ago, 62 now, and then I think he has the third highest score also. So the crazy thing about Karl Anthony Towns is that's in a loss. They lost to the Hornets last night, 128-125. If you go online and look it up, their coach called it a selfish play. He said they were absolutely horrible on defense. They had a big lead and they gave it up in the fourth. As happy as he may have been to score 62, his coach was not happy with the way that play went.
No, that's it's a very interesting take on a game like that, especially against a Charlotte team that you probably should have handled for the most part. But I know us Nuggets fans, we're excited to see that because now the Nuggets are a half game out of the one seed at this point. So as we start to get into this second half stretch of the season, try to get that home court advantage throughout the playoffs. We saw how good the Nuggets were in the playoffs last year at home. You would love to get that again. But, yeah, crazy night in the NBA, scoring that many points, one for Joel Embiid and then 62 for Kat. Big nights in the NBA. We'll see if maybe Jokic can try to put his name up there tonight against the Pacers.
Yeah, and one thing about it, too, is, Angel, you tell me how you feel about this, but I think it's important for the Nuggets to be ahead of the Timberwolves in the playoff seeding, if it's 1-2 or if it's whatever it may be, because that Timberwolves team, they kind of match up well with the Nuggets, having Kat and having Rudy Gobert, like those two big guys in there. They can kind of close up that paint and leave less room for Jokic to do what he does. So that having home field advantage over the Timberwolves, especially, may be something big as the playoffs come around.
Yeah, and we saw that, you know, a little bit in their first round series last year, where Anthony Edwards kind of, you know, came about and kind of had his showing out performance in a couple of those games, where, you know, the Nuggets obviously won that series 4-1, but it still felt very competitive. And you mentioned the addition of Rudy Gobert with Kat. It's a very formidable defense that they set up. They match well up against the Nuggets. So you want to see. I know they've already beaten them once this season. We'll see how they match up later on here in a couple of months. But yeah, that's a very intriguing matchup. And, you know, you just want the Nuggets to be at home because they play their best basketball at home. They're one of the better home teams in the league the last few years. Obviously, the altitude has something to play a part in that. But yeah, I predict that to be probably the Western Conference Finals between those two teams.
No, I completely agree with you. And for me, we're going to have to get more, and I know this may just be the player that Jamal Murray is, but I don't see that killer instinct that he has during the playoffs, and I just wish we would see it more. We kind of saw it against Boston the other night, but that Philadelphia game, where was it? Like, they could have beat Philadelphia that night. They could have went on that road trip and ended up 3-0, but Jamal Murray just wasn't there that night against Philadelphia. I don't want to call him out like that, but my gosh, we need that every night. If you're going to go win another championship, like, yeah, this is just the way the NBA is, though. Like, okay, we've got ourselves into playoff position. We're going to play our rest of our games and get into the playoffs. And then, boom, we flip the switch, and here we go. And that's one of my things that I despise about the NBA, honestly. But Jamal Murray, as we get into the playoffs, can he just turn it on again? I don't know. What do you think, Angel?
Yeah, I mean, I share some of those concerns about Jamal. I think obviously this now being his first full year fully healthy from the knee a couple of years ago, winning the championship, it's you do expect a little bit of that hangover feeling a little bit, but now we're getting into February basketball, almost into the All-Star break. I don't know if that's a huge concern of his being on the All-Star team. I know that's a personal award maybe he wants to go after. But he creates this narrative for himself that it's, okay, playoff Murray, bubble Murray. He's going to show up in the big moments. But you mentioned it. You showed up for Boston. You didn't show up for the Philly game. And maybe that was just because it felt more like an Embiid versus Jokic type of game, where Boston's maybe more of a Tatum versus Murray type of game. I think he thrives on those big-time matchups, but it's games like tonight against Indiana where you want to see him get that consistent 20, 25-point performances.
Well, and we need to see it. Like, it's scary. Like, Pacers have Halliburton still out, I think. He's still injured, so he's not going to be playing tonight. But this is a game where the Nuggets should go out and handle business pretty easily, I think. It shouldn't be much of a problem for him. Without Halliburton on that Pacers team, you still have Miles Turner to deal with. But the scoring is going to be down for them a little bit. And I want to see Murray. I want to know that he can do it for more than just one game a week. Like, I want to know that when we get to the playoffs, he's going to be able to go, okay, I got this. Like, I'm back to being me. Okay. Yeah, and we need to get out on a break here. You're listening to The Whole Show, powered by Chevron on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Congratulations to Coach Bruce Dick on his induction into the Colorado High School Coaches Association Hall of Fame. Hear the Hall of Famer on KFKA weekdays 10 to 11.